Hello and welcome to Sound Body, a weekly program of information on health topics and ideas that can help you live life to its fullest. I'm Louise Craig. The title of today's Sound Body is What Do You Do? Which can be the more personal, what do you do? Or the more plaintive and exasperated, what do you do? Both of which make sense when we're talking about how to pay for medical care. What shortcuts do you take when you can't find enough money? Do you sell your diabetes test strips, take your medication less often, or ask the pharmaceutical company for help? What do you do when you can't figure out what your procedure or hospital stay is going to cost you? Are you willing to try drugs that have been approved for other uses, but not for your particular need? Today we're going to read about some of the ways people are coping with medical bills they can't afford other than looking to friends, family, or GoFundMe. Let's start at the New York Times, an article written by Ted Alcorn, published on January 14, 2018, titled, The Strange Marketplace for Diabetes Test Strips. Now it's going to be a hard one to say over and over, test strips. On most afternoons, people arrive from across New York City with backpacks and plastic bags filled with boxes of small plastic strips, forming a line on the sidewalk outside a Harlem storefront. Hanging from the awning, a banner reads, Get cash with your extra diabetic test strips. Each strip is a laminate of plastic and chemicals little bigger than a fingernail, a single-use diagnostic test for measuring blood sugar. More than 30 million Americans have type 1 and type 2 diabetes, and most use several test strips daily to monitor their condition. But at this store on West 116th Street, each strip is also a lucrative commodity, part of an informal economy and unused strips nationwide. Often the sellers are insured and paid little out of pocket for the strips. The buyers may be underinsured or uninsured and unable to pay retail prices, which can run well over $100 for a box of 100 strips. Some clinicians are surprised to learn of this vast resale market, but it has existed for decades, an unusual example of the vagaries of American healthcare. Unlike the resale of prescription drugs, which is prohibited by law, it is generally legal to resell unused test strips. And this store is far from the only place buying. Mobile phones light up with robo-texts. We buy diabetic test strips. Online, scores of companies thrive with names like teststripsearch.com and quickcashforteststrips.com. I'm taking advantage, as are my peers, of a loophole, said the owner of one popular site, who asked that his name not be used. We're allowed to do that. I don't even think we should be, frankly. Test strips were first developed in 1965 to provide an immediate reading of blood sugar or glucose levels. The user pricks a finger, places a drop of blood on the strip, and inserts it into a meter that provides a reading. The test strips were created for use in doctors' offices, but by 1980, medical device manufacturers had designed meters for home use. They became the standard of care for many people with diabetes, who test their blood as often as 10 times a day. Test strips are a multi-billion dollar industry. A 2012 study found that among insulin-dependent patients who monitor their blood sugar, strips accounted for nearly one quarter of pharmacy costs. Today, four manufacturers account for half of global sales. In a retail pharmacy, name-brand strips command high prices. But like most goods and services in American healthcare, that number doesn't reflect what most people pay. The sticker price is the result of behind-the-scenes negotiations between the strip's manufacturer and insurers. Manufacturers set a high list price and then negotiate to become an insurer's preferred supplier by offering a hefty rebate. These transactions are invisible to the insured consumer, who might cover a copay at most. But the arrangement leaves the uninsured, those least able to pay, paying sky-high sticker prices out of pocket. Also left out are the underinsured who may need to first satisfy a high deductible. For a patient testing their blood many times a day, paying for strips out of pocket could add up to thousands of dollars a year. Small wonder, then, that a gray market thrives. The middlemen buy extras from people who obtain strips through insurance at little cost to themselves and then resell to the less fortunate. That was the opportunity that caught Chad Langley's eye. He and his twin brother launched the website teststrips.com to solicit test strips from the public for resale. Today, they buy strips from roughly 8,000 people. Their third-floor office in Reading, Massachusetts, receives around 100 deliveries a day. The amount the Langleys pay depends on the brand, expiration date, and condition, but the profit margins are reliably high. For example, the brothers will pay $35 plus shipping for a 100-count box of the popular brand Freestyle Light in mint condition. The Langleys sell the box for $60. CVS, by contrast, retails the strips for $164. The Langleys are mainly buying up excess strips from insured patients who've been flooded with them, sometimes even when not medically necessary. Although patients who manage their diabetes with non-insulin medications or with diet and exercise needn't test their blood sugar daily, a recent analysis of insurance claims found that nearly 1 in 7 patients still used test strips regularly. The market glut is also a consequence of a strategy adopted by manufacturers to sell patients proprietary meters designed to read only their brand of strips. If a patient's insurer shifts her to a new brand, she must get a new meter, often leaving behind a supply of useless strips. While some resellers use websites like Amazon or eBay to market strips directly to consumers, the biggest profits are in returning them to retail pharmacies, which sell them as new and bill the customer's insurance the full price. The insurer reimburses the pharmacy the retail price and then demands a partial rebate from the manufacturer. But it's a rebate the manufacturer has paid already for this box of strips. Glenn Johnson, general manager for market access at Abbott Diabetes Care, which makes about 1 in 5 strips purchased in the United States, said manufacturers lose more than $100 million in profits a year this way, much of it in New York, California, and Florida. The company supported a new California law that prohibits pharmacies from acquiring test strips from any but an authorized list of distributors. Mr. Johnson said he has spoken with lawmakers about similar efforts in Florida, New Jersey, New York, and Ohio. Such measures leave intact the inflated retail prices that make the gray market possible and which critics say benefit manufacturers and their retail intermediaries. Pharmacy benefit managers. In a lawsuit against PBMs and the dominant test strip manufacturers filed in New Jersey, consumer advocates presented data showing that the average wholesale price for test strips has risen as much as 70% over the last decade. They alleged that this has allowed the defendants to pocket an unfair portion of the rebates. The price of a strip would be much lower if it wasn't fattened by profiteering, said Gretchen Obrist, one of the lawyers who brought the case. It's a tiny little piece of plastic that's super cheap to manufacture, and they've managed to make a cash cow out of it, she said. To justify the rising price of strips, manufacturers point to advances in engineering that have made the strips smaller and more convenient to use. But there is little evidence those features have improved health outcomes for people with diabetes, and with increasingly unaffordable prices, the newfangled test strips may be even less accessible. The markups on strips look particularly stark when compared to the cost of producing them. Test strips are basically printed like in a printing press, said David Cliff, who publishes a newsletter on diabetes. It's not brain surgery. He estimated the typical test strip costs less than a dime to make. We'll move now to NBC News, published on January 15th, 2019. You can now get your hospital's price list. Good luck making sense of it. And this was written by Nigel Chiwaya and Jeremiah Kimmelman. Hospitals have posted the prices of their services. Good luck making sense of them. Since January 1st, hospitals across the country have been publishing price lists online to comply with a new Trump administration rule. But the resulting documents, which can include as many as 60,000 items, are hard to decipher, with descriptions like Abbott Technus Toric Aspheric IOL ZCT 300 21.0D SE 3.00CYL and Fill Pull Void. And if you're not a data analyst or a programmer, you might have trouble reading the files at all. So far, the biggest hospitals have largely complied with the rule. An NBC News analysis of the 24 largest hospitals in the country found that 19 made documents available, although the lists were often buried many clicks deep on the hospital's website. Officials behind the rule say it will improve transparency about hospital costs and encourage comparison shopping. Healthcare advocates are lukewarm on the rule and doubt it will ultimately help patients act more like consumers. Honestly, it doesn't do a whole lot, said Sean Greminger, Senior Director of Federal Relations at the healthcare advocacy group Families USA. It doesn't necessarily tell consumers anything that is really helpful in terms of making decisions. The issue, advocates say, is that the documents produced by the rule are difficult to find, difficult to understand, difficult to compare, and don't reflect the final prices consumers will actually pay. Descriptions in the documents can be vague, with similar-sounding services carrying vastly different prices. For example, the price list at New York Presbyterian Hospital, based in New York City, includes a service called Treat Finger Fracture Each for $479. But the list also has another service, Treat Finger Fracture Period Each, that costs $8,121. A hospital representative told NBC News that the $479 procedure represented treatment for a minor fracture, while the $8,121 procedure is for a severe bone break. When descriptions aren't vague, they are often listed in complex shorthand, like LCSKUB T/A/L greater than equal to 100 cm 1 st 100 sq and number sign 10x hook, which are listed in Miami's Jackson Memorial Hospital price document. A Jackson Memorial spokesperson told NBC News that the hospital featured an online tool that provided custom price quotes, as well as a phone number for customers who have questions. Even the types of documents produced by hospitals vary. Some hospitals made web pages with prices and tables, while others published a downloadable spreadsheet. Still others made their prices available as JSON or XML documents, file formats more often used by programmers and data analysts than consumers. It's virtually impossible for a layperson to read, Greminger said. It's a list hundreds of pages long with every single potential service a hospital can provide. It's almost impossible to tell what is what. One reason the documents vary across hospitals is that the rule itself is broad. The rule, issued by the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, states only that hospitals must make available a list of their current standard charges via the internet in a machine-readable format. That list can be the hospital's charge master, a standard industry price list document, or any other document of the hospital's choice. Those who follow the healthcare industry say there is value in making prices public. National Patient Advocate Foundation spokesperson Caitlin Donovan said the documents will benefit advocacy groups, journalists, and researchers covering the industry. For hospitals to have a charge master where they think it's appropriate to charge $1,000 for a Band-Aid, that's important for the public to know, Donovan said. But the problem, advocates say, is that the prices listed are essentially irrelevant. An insurance company will have negotiated a lower price for a service. Costs to patients on Medicare, Medicaid, or Veterans Affairs health care are capped by law, and low-income patients without insurance will likely work with the hospital's billing department to lower their totals. The only person who would pay the chargemaster price is an uninsured person who has money and is paying out of pocket, Greminger said. Hospitals are aware of the limitations of chargemaster documents. Legacy Health, a hospital system in Washington and Oregon, writes on its pricing page that chargemasters are not a helpful tool for patients to comparison shop between hospitals or to estimate what healthcare services are going to cost them out of their own pocket. The administrator of the Medicaid and Medicare Center, Seema Verma, said the rule, which the center is still trying to figure out how to enforce, represented a first step toward transparent pricing and that hospitals weren't prohibited from going further. Price transparency in healthcare is one of the biggest priorities for CMS and the Trump administration, Verma said. Verma also pointed out that some hospitals went beyond the rule, such as the University of Utah Health. The health system set up an online price comparison tool for the 70 most common procedures and a call center so that patients can get further help determining the prices they should expect to pay based on their insurance and circumstances. Greminger said his group would like to see more such tools, but added that the biggest step toward price transparency would be making hospital-to-insurer negotiations public. Currently, those negotiations are confidential, which allows hospitals to charge insurers different rates for the same services. Hospitals and insurers have a financial incentive to keep it as complicated as it is. Now we go to an article written for Kaiser Health News by Sarah Jane Tribble, and this was published on December 28, 2018. And the title is High Drug Prices, Some Pharma Firms Will Send You a Check. Kip Burgess was relieved last year when pharmaceutical giant Amgen overnighted him a $2,976 check to help pay for his go-to arthritis drug, Enbrel. The 36-year-old psychologist had run into an increasingly common problem. The copay coupon sent by Amgen couldn't cover the drug's more than $4,000 monthly price. "Nothing in the world gives me more anxiety than just getting my medication," Burgess said. "There's nothing you can do but beg." Panicked, Burgess had called Amgen and pleaded for help. The drug maker sent him the check after he provided a credit card statement and an explanation of benefits to prove he bought its drug. It's one of the little-known secrets in healthcare. When financial incentives like copay coupons and debit cards won't work, pharmaceutical companies sometimes will write a check, what they call direct reimbursement, to make sure a loyal patient will stay on a high-cost brand-name drug. Drug makers began using now-popular copay coupons and other forms of assistance more than a decade ago to help patients pay out-of-pocket costs for medicines, particularly high-cost specialty drugs such as those that treat autoimmune disorders. The coupons have a dual purpose. They mask the true costs of a drug for patients and give patients a financial incentive to stay on an expensive drug until their insurance deductible is met. Ellen Albritton, a senior policy analyst with Families USA, said the multiple calls Burgess made to his insurer, pharmacy manager, and the drug maker to pay for his drug is a lot to put on a patient. "This highlights just how dysfunctional the system is, and it just isn't working for patients," Albritton said. The practice of sending checks is legal as long as the patients are not enrolled in government-funded insurance such as Medicare and Medicaid, said William Schiffbauer, a Washington, D.C.-based health insurance attorney. "You can accept cash from anybody as long as it's not a government program," Schiffbauer said, noting there may be income tax obligations for the patient. The federal anti-kickback and Stark laws were meant to prevent bribery of patients and doctors and do not apply to private commercial insurance plans. AbbVie, which makes the blockbuster arthritis drug Humira, will send a check if patients can prove their copay card doesn't work for a variety of reasons, said Adele Infante, director of external communications for the company. Amgen, the maker of Burgess's arthritis medicine, provides up to $12,000 of copay assistance each year to commercially insured Enbrel patients who need help meeting out-of-pocket expenses, often regardless of the patient's financial status. When the cards fail to work for whatever reason, Amgen can send direct reimbursement. While Amgen's primary assistance is through copay cards, in some instances, based on patient preference, Amgen will provide direct reimbursement after a patient has already paid for the medicine, Amgen's Kristen Neese, Director of Corporate Affairs, said in an emailed statement. Harry Totanis, Chief Executive of ConnectiveRx, a pharmaceutical services company, said sending checks to patients is not a commonly used practice and happens a fraction of 1% of the time. He declined to confirm the average value of the checks or name the drug makers that issue checks via ConnectiveRx. All of these programs try to help patients afford the medications, said Totanis, whose company bought PSKW, which issued the check Burgess received from Amgen in 2017. Daniel Nam, Executive Director of Federal Programs for AHIP, America's Health Insurance Plans, said direct reimbursement using checks is just another way for manufacturers to make insurance companies pay for expensive drugs, which helps jack up monthly premiums. This approach will create a new black hole of patient-directed payments and avoid any scrutiny, he said. Insurers and lawmakers have begun to push back against the popular copay programs, saying they raise the cost of medications in the long run. California passed a law last year limiting their use, and federal litigators have increased scrutiny. Insurers and pharmacy benefit managers like CVS Caremark and Express Scripts have begun refusing to use copay cards as the drug makers intended. CVS Caremark introduced copay accumulator programs 2 years ago. Patients can use a copay card or coupon to help cover the cost of the drug, but the payment does not count toward their insurance plan's deductible or out-of-pocket maximum. That often means that when the assistance from the drug maker, which is generally limited to a fixed dollar amount, runs out, the patient is on the hook for a much larger share of the cost of the drug. It is important to remember that while manufacturer-sponsored programs, such as copay cards, can help reduce out-of-pocket costs for patients in the short term, they can also lead to increased healthcare costs in the system by encouraging the use of higher-cost, often-branded drugs, Christine Kramer, Senior Director of CVS Health's Corporate Communications, emailed this month. A copay accumulator likely triggered Burgess's panicked call in 2017. Amgen had issued Burgess a copay card preloaded with $12,000 to help cover his out-of-pocket expenses. But his pharmacy began charging the full monthly cost for Enbrel, not merely his out-of-pocket share, against his copay card. And that big charge didn't count against his annual deductible. So after a couple of months, Burgess suddenly needed to pay thousands of dollars to meet his deductible and get the medication that helped him get out of bed in the morning. But Amgen is reformulating the remedy Burgess sought, and he and other patients may be out of luck. As of 2018, Amgen said, it will send checks only to financially needy patients whose insurers and pharmacy benefit managers use accumulator programs. The patients must show incomes at 500% or below the federal poverty level, or $60,700 for an individual and $125,500 for a family of four. An Amgen email stated that only an extremely small number of patients have received money that way. Burgess doesn't qualify. He had to raid his savings this year for the money to cover his deductible. It really feels like they are throwing me under the bus to get back at the insurance company, Burgess said. These two giant corporations are fighting it out, and they don't really care about me in any shape or form. And we have time to read about cheap common drugs that may help mental illness. This was written for BBC News by James Gallagher, published January 9, 2019. Cheap and widely used drugs for diabetes and heart health have potential for treating severe mental illness, a study hints. It showed the number of times patients needed hospital treatment fell by up to a fifth when they took the drugs. The researchers at University College London say their findings have enormous potential, but they and independent experts say the results now need to be tested in clinical trials. The starting point for the researchers was a list of currently prescribed medications that science predicts could also help patients with severe mental health disorders. The team focused on anti-cholesterol drugs called statins, which may calm inflammation linked to mental health problems or help the body absorb antipsychotic medications. Blood pressure drugs, which may alter the calcium signaling in the brain that has been linked to bipolar disorder and schizophrenia. Type 2 diabetes drug metformin, which may alter mood. But rather than test them in trials, the scientists went looking for evidence in the real world. They analyzed lifelong medical records of 142,691 people in Sweden who had schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, or other severe mental illness. They then compared the number of times each was admitted to a psychiatric hospital clinic when they were taking those medications and when they were not. Dr. Joseph Hayes, one of the researchers at UCL, said the paper suggests a 10 to 20% reduction in the number of episodes when on the medications rather than off. The results published in the journal JAMA Psychiatry also showed a reduction in self-harm. "It's incredibly exciting," Dr. Hayes said. "It's got enormous potential, and I'm pleased with the way it has turned out. But this is really just a starting point." He wants the drugs to now be tested in large clinical trials, which should give a final answer. In the meantime, Dr. Hayes says people should not go out and try to get the drugs themselves. But he says there are many patients who should be on these drugs for their physical health who are not getting them. The thing to do would be to see your GP about a full physical health review, Dr. Hayes said. There's a huge number of people that may benefit from a statin for their heart health, and there's a potential knock-on for their mental health, similarly with metformin. So I thank you for tuning in to Sound Body today, and I hope you'll come back next week for more healthy living ideas. This has been Sound Body, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm Louise Craig, and I hope you'll join me again next week for more health updates and information for healthy living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.